Welcome to KDNK's Weekly Newsreel,
a news magazine that takes a look at the week's top local and regional news stories aired on KDNK between Monday and Friday. Subscribe to our podcast and give us a review on iTunes. If you have a tip on something you'd like the KDNK news team to cover, send it to news@kdnk.org. All submissions are confidential. The weekly newsreel is underwritten by RJ Paddywax Pet Outfitters, next to City Market in Elgibel, open 7 days a week. More info at 970-963-1700 or rjpaddywax.com.
I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host.
The State Ethics Commission ruled Friday that former Governor John Hickenlooper broke an ethics rule by accepting free flights and meals as gifts in 2018 while he was in office. KUNC's Scott Franz reports that the trips in question include a free flight to Connecticut for the commissioning of the USS Colorado submarine and a trip to a conference in Italy. Hickenlooper said the flight to Connecticut was exempt from the gift ban and that he paid $1,500 to cover the cost of the Italy trip. Hickenlooper is running for the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senator in the state primary this month.
Around 10 a.m. today, a man entered the Elgibel City Market yelling that he had a gun. Shortly thereafter, Basalt police arrested 40-year-old Brandon Smith of Texas. Lieutenant Aaron Munch told KDNK that Smith did not have a gun on his person or in his car, but he did have a set of brass knuckles. Smith was arrested for felony menacing and possession of an illegal weapon and taken to the Eagle County Jail. Basalt police say there were no other threats to surrounding businesses or residents.
The U.S. Senate is expected to debate and vote on a public lands bill over the next couple of weeks. Colorado Public Radio reports that Democratic Senator Michael Bennett wants the Colorado Outdoor Recreation and Economy, or CORE Act, included in the discussion. Bennett filed the CORE Act as an amendment to Republican Senator Cory Gardner's Great American Outdoors Act. Gardner's bill would permanently and fully fund the Land and Water Conservation Fund and provide money for maintenance backlogs at national parks. The CORE Act would protect 400,000 acres of land across the state, including the Thompson Divide. Colorado Republican leaders in D.C. have not signed on to Bennett's bill.
It took 1 year for the 8th grade class at the Waldorf School in Santa Fe to raise $2,800 for their class trip. But the trip was canceled because of the pandemic and, reports CNN, the students chose to help the Navajo Nation, which has been hit hard by COVID-19. The class purchased supplies, medicines, food, and water for the tribe and made the delivery earlier this month. Four employees at the Elgibel City Market tested positive for COVID-19 last week. The Aspen Times reports that local health departments are conducting contact tracing. An undisclosed number of employees who may have come in contact with the four workers are in quarantine. The company's emergency leave policy provides them with up to 2 weeks of paid time off. The Eagle County Health Department says the store is not the source of the outbreak.
Heather's Savory Pies in Basalt is closed until further notice. The Aspen Daily News reports that the restaurant closed immediately Thursday after co-owner Heather Lujan tested positive for COVID-19. Mountain Valley Health Centers in Glenwood Springs, Rifle, and Basalt are now offering active illness testing for COVID-19. According to a press release, testing is by appointment only. Glenwood Medical Associates is offering the new Roche COVID-19 antibody test. The Post Independent reports that the blood test determines if someone who previously experienced symptoms actually had the virus. The Roche test is considered to be more than 99% accurate.
On Friday, the final day of this year's legislative session, the Colorado House of Representatives passed a series of reforms they say will help prevent violent encounters with police.
Several lawmakers were crying after the bill passed with strong bipartisan support. It mandates the use of body cameras, outlaws chokeholds, and adds new transparency requirements for law enforcement agencies. Democrat Leslie Herod leads the Black Legislative Caucus. She says it will rein in the use of deadly force.
How many kids, how many souls are lost, are going to be lost before we step in and say we have a duty to intervene? We have a duty to do something about it.
After lawmakers work through some amendments added in the House, it is expected to be signed by Governor Polis. I'm Scott Franz in Denver.
In another rulemaking session Wednesday, as part of the SB 181 process, the COGCC approved what Governor Jared Polis calls the most stringent protection of groundwater in the nation when it comes to oil and gas extraction. At a Zoom press conference Wednesday afternoon, Julie Murphy, COGCC Chief of Staff and Senior Policy Advisor, said annual Bradenhead or Casinghead testing for every well in the state and increased well monitoring makes the state's rules stand out.
This is a tool that we can use for existing wells and newly drilled wells going forward to verify that the well, the casing, the cementing is continuing to operate and continuing to isolate fluids and protect groundwater as designed.
She added that strong casing and cementing regulations will protect groundwater from fluids from drilling operations. Casing and cementing rules have been used to protect groundwater on a case-by-case basis, but she says the new regs will be a minimum statewide requirement. The new regs also make it easier to require Bradenhead testing.
We would have had to follow a more rigorous process to require an operator to install Bradenhead testing equipment, and now that is a statewide expectation, and operators have a few months to comply with that requirement.
Other changes include more public access and transparency about protection of groundwater near homes and drinking water sources. The rules go into effect on November 2nd.
So that gives operators who have wells that do not have Bradenhead access installed a couple of months to install that Bradenhead access. For any newly drilled well, that would already be a requirement and an expectation. That lead time is to make sure the equipment exists.
COVID-19 has changed the look of Wilderness Workshop's summer hiking series. I spoke with organizer Brandon Jones to find out more.
Trail mixes are our new pandemic-friendly offering for at least the month of June. We're offering two, both in the Thompson Divide, and these are an opportunity for folks to find me posted up alongside the trail in the backcountry and engage in some of our normal advocacy opportunities and educational opportunities without the typical hike series logistics of carpooling and leading some larger groups along the trail together. I'll be hanging out from 10 to 3 at both Marion Gulch on Saturday, June 13th, and Broderick Creek on Saturday, June 27th.
So how does it work?
Just show up. I got this idea from kind of the through hiking culture where people will spontaneously show up with like breakfast burritos for people hiking like Appalachian or Pacific Crest Trail. There's kind of like an element of surprise and spontaneity to it. So yeah, I want, you know, folks to find me back there knowing that I'll be back there, but also just normal trail users to come across Wilderness Workshop, having a presence in the backcountry and be pleasantly surprised by our stand there with some fun giveaways and postcards to send to Senator Cory Gardner asking for his support of the CORE Act, which would permanently protect the Thompson Divide from future oil and gas leasing.
What is the status of the Colorado Outdoor Recreation or CORE Act?
The CORE Act has passed the House, and you know, we're waiting to get it a hearing in the Senate.
What kind of feedback have you been getting? I mean, are the hikes too strenuous? Are they not strenuous enough?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. I think I try to offer a variety of hikes throughout the summer, and some of these hikes are on the shorter, more casual side. For instance, we have a watercolor and mindfulness walk that only goes about a quarter mile before we kind of stop and find a nice spot along the trail to learn about watercoloring. And then there's other more difficult hikes that, you know, get above the 10-mile mark and require more of a time and energy investment, but certainly exhibit some of the most beautiful
public lands in the area and places that we're really excited to take people because they're off the beaten path. And I think that's what attracts people about the hike series is that a lot of these trails people know by name but don't exactly know where they are, how to get there. So I really love introducing people to trails that they've never experienced before.
Do you have a favorite spot?
I do, but I'm not sure I can tell you that.
Why not? Because you don't want a lot of people to go there? Or
one thing that's been new for me this summer has been some of the BLM areas that we're focusing on within the Colorado River Valley Field Office. The BLM is revising their management plan due to some, you know, legal battles that Wilderness Workshop and other conservation organizations have been a part of that require them to consider the impacts of these management plans on the climate. So I've had a chance to explore some new areas, and one of those areas is on the Hogback outside of Rifle. So as far as favorite areas, I'd say right now, the Hogback outside of Rifle has some really wild sort of unmarked ridge walks that have been really fun. And so, we are offering a Hogback hike in September. So folks can look forward to that once we release the hike series schedule.
More information about the summer hiking series is at wildernessworkshop.org.
You're listening to the weekly news reel featuring top stories aired between Monday and Friday. In-kind support comes from Grassroots Community Network, promoting civic participation through civil discourse, creative endeavors, and cultural interaction. Grassroots TV also partners with KD&K to air live Pitkin County public health and community meetings. More info at grassrootstv.org.
Lift Up's Farm to Food Pantry program is expanding. KD&K's Raleigh Burley has this report.
Fresh, healthy, nutrient-dense local food is a human right.
This is the ideal behind an initiative to fill local food assistance pantries with freshly harvested local food, as described by Megan Lovelace, who is Regional Food Systems Coordinator for SANA, the Safe Abundant Nutrition Alliance.
Because food insecurity means more than not having meat at your grocery store, right? Food insecurity means not having the means to actually purchase food.
SANA, a collaborative effort across Garfield, Western Eagle, and Pitkin counties, works with public health departments, local nonprofits, and stakeholders to provide nutrient-dense food for all community members,
regardless of their socioeconomic status.
In its second year, the Farm to Food Pantry program utilizes funds from the Food Pantry Assistance Grant from the state of Colorado, first allocated in 2018, along with other donations to directly purchase locally grown, nutrient-dense foods for the 7 pantries operated by Lift Up.
The last couple months have been rather crazy. We normally serve about 675 families from Aspen to Parachute. Since we had to close our brick and mortar pantries, everything is done in drive-through distribution locations.
Debbie Patrick, Development and Marketing Director for Lift Up, attests to a spike in demand at their pantries that reflects the historic need nationally catalyzed by the COVID-19 crisis.
We went from the 675 families to over 900 at the peak a week. So from 675 a month to 900 a week, plus Aspen and Basalt.
That's an increase of nearly 4 times the prior norm.
Another aspect of food insecurity, of course, is the value chain and how we've come to rely, perhaps globally, upon a value chain that is not necessarily serving our watersheds, our food sheds.
As described by Megan Lovelace, the Farm to Food Pantry program organized by SANA seeks to address immediate food insecurity while also strengthening our local food systems.
Farmers and ranchers are the lifeblood of rural economies across Colorado, and that's no different here in the Roaring Fork Valley. So when we give our dollars back directly to those farmers and ranchers in our region, we're able to boost our economy, support our local agriculture, and get the maximum amount of nutrients from these fresh produce or meats or whatever we're procuring, because they're traveling less, our carbon footprint is less, and the food is fresh.
Participating farms this year include Early Morning Orchard, High Water Farm, Abundant Terraced Earth, and returning for their second year, the Farm Collaborative, Potter Farms, Two Roots Farm, and Wild Mountain Seeds. For full disclosure, I currently intern as a volunteer with Wild Mountain Seeds.
As we are able to raise more funds for the program and buy more local produce, we will continue to purchase not just from those farms, but of course through the aggregator, Farm Runners.
Farm Runners is a small business based in Hotchkiss, chosen to collect food from participating farms and deliver it to LiftUp.
As we go into this pre-purchasing with the farmers that allows them to plan ahead, we will be coordinating with both Farm Runners and Skips. They will coordinate back with the farmers. The deliveries will come to them, and then they will be helping to get back out to our pantries.
These foods will be made available at LiftUp's drive-through distribution sites for June and July, with the possibility of pantries as well as LiftUp thrift stores reopening in August. According to Debbie Patrick, drive-through distribution hours will be adjusted beginning on June 15th.
We're going to go down to one day a week. However, it'll be a longer period of time each of those days, and we're going to have some flexible hours in there so we can have them later in the day for people that maybe are starting to go back to work. And it also tests some opportunities for LiftUp to have different hours once we reopen.
Those details, as well as the possibility to donate to this program, are available on LiftUp's website, liftup.org.
There is a need for the financial support, but then again, it is staying within our economy. It helps create jobs. It helps support our farmers and ranchers. And bottom line, it's feeding people. It's feeding people and helping provide some relief in a really stressful time.
For KDNK News, I'm Raleigh Burley.
Five Point Adventure Film Festival's Dream Project awards $1,500 scholarships to students from Aspen to Parachute to help them pursue their dreams. 2020 marks the 11th year of the project. KDNK's Lucas Turner spoke to director Tracy Wilson and a few of this year's scholarship recipients to find out more.
Each year we give out 7 grants of $1,500 for students to go and kind of live out their dream, whatever that means to them. And in the last 10 years, we've given out over $85,000 to about 60 students.
That's Tracy Wilson, director of the Dream Project for the Five Points Film Festival. She says the scholarship program is open to a wide group of students every year.
So this is an open scholarship program to any students in the Roaring Fork Valley, from Parachute to Aspen.
Some of the Dream Projects that have been funded in the past include a valley-wide LGBTQ dance, building a skate park on a Navajo reservation, collecting school supplies for children in Kenya, creating a film club, and many, many others. Wilson says she could highlight any of this year's scholarship recipients, but speaks specifically about Roaring Fork High School junior Talon Carbalera.
He's hoping to use his skills as a bike mechanic to work with Wake Passion Bike Project and the Carbondale Homeless Alliance to build bikes and trailers for some of the local homeless population in Carbondale.
Wilson also highlights William Bingaman, another junior at Roaring Fork High School.
His plan is to use his Dream Project funds to create more mental health support around the student body of the Roaring Fork School District. So it's just really neat project, kind of seeing the need of what maybe needs to happen at your school and making that shift to change.
Cassidy Meyer is a junior at Colorado Rocky Mountain School and another scholarship recipient. And speaking about the scholarship application process, she explains that at 9 years old, she visited a Spanish language school in Nicaragua and has wanted to return there ever since.
The Spanish school was basically created to create jobs for the community and to kind of bring income to the really small town that it's in. And when I went there when I was 9 and 10, I just kind of fell in love. And they have this program where they foster and rescue dogs off of the street. And I've just, ever since that point, I've always wanted to go back and kind of help with that rescue animal program and just whatever else is needed in that community, because I think it was just a really powerful experience to see when I was little.
Cassidy Myers says she wanted to do something meaningful with her summer, which is what motivated her to apply for the scholarship, noting that due to the coronavirus pandemic, her travel plans are being pushed back for now, but will move forward, likely during her senior year at CRMS.
I just think it's a really, really cool opportunity, and it's really awesome that Five Point kind of gives that opportunity to kids in the Valley. And I'm really excited to get to complete my dream.
Another student to be awarded a scholarship this year is Joseph Thompson, a junior at Coleridge High School. His dream is a bit different than some of the others. What exactly it is, well, I'll just give you this hint. He goes by another name, DJ Event Horizon.
So I just kind of was like, I want to make more cool music that I can share with my community and chase my dream of making DJing a viable career.
Joseph Thompson says part of expanding his DJ career is getting more into producing original tracks like the one we're hearing now, which is called Selva. Thompson, or DJ Event Horizon, describes DJing as more of a performance art, while production more commonly refers to actually creating digital music, utilizing samples and other special software add-ons called plugins. This is exactly what he plans to use his scholarship money for.
So you buy it and download it, and then you can use it in your digital audio workstation. So they can be synths, help you make sounds, they can be samplers, they can be sound banks. And a lot of them are also just like tools to help you, like different meters, compressors, limiters, stuff like that, that helps you have a professional sound.
Joseph Thomas has already started publishing original music to his DJ Event Horizon SoundCloud page. You can find a link to his work at kdnk.org. The Five Points Dream Project director, Tracy Wilson, says the projects have been made possible by Alpine Bank, Coldwell Mason Morse, and 2757 Design and Build. Wilson says these donations keep the program funded operationally, meaning any additional donations go directly to future scholarship recipients.
So if anyone's interested in making a donation, they can just go to our website at fivepointfilm.org/dreamproject, and it'll kind of take them right there.
KDNK News, I'm Lucas Turner.
And finally, reporter Kathleen Shannon took a look this week at rural policing in Colorado in the wake of George Floyd's death in Minneapolis.
Policing is a generic, and it's really challenging for us when people group us all into one, like it's all the same everywhere. It's really regionally based, and policing is different at different areas. It's even different at different parts of Colorado. So if people want to work in a mountain town community and they want to live in one of our CMC service areas, they should really come to us. If they want to work in the Front Range or a bigger city, they should seek out a police academy in that area, because that's the style of policing that they're going to learn. For us, you're going to learn a lot more of the kind of that local philosophy and treating people, you know, with respect and problem solving kind of informally, being able to respect what the community wants you to be doing. And then again, you're going to have a lot higher levels of interaction with our citizens here than you would have probably in a bigger metro area.
That's Stuart Curry. He's the director of the Law Enforcement Training Academy at Colorado Mountain College. Curry himself is a graduate of the program, and he says more than 90% of graduates move on to work in local mountain communities. While police agencies do have a specific curriculum set by the state, each academy and its teachers, who are mostly local officers, influence the style of policing.
We've always emphasized in this entire region education over enforcement. And so part of what, you know, now that I'm the director of that program, what I really emphasize with the students is you need to educate people on how things work. You need to be that law enforcement professional and that expert and really tell them how things work and explain kind of the reasons behind that. We've always kind of been more of a spirit of the law instead of a letter of the law kind of a philosophy here, not only at the academy, but in these police agencies around here. I used to always call it the why behind the how.
If police are acting as educators, then they themselves must stay educated. The Carbondale Police Department keeps officers in the know with monthly and annual trainings in areas like firearms, driving, anti-bias, and arrest control, which ranges from using handcuffs properly to the different ways to make a domestic violence arrest or a vehicle stop arrest.
The state has certain requirements, and they're fairly low in general terms. This is an agency that goes well above and beyond what is required, and that's because we choose to do that.
That's Lieutenant Kirk Wilson, who recently relocated from Rifle to step into the role of chief of police. While discussing training, current chief Gene Schilling mentions a buzzword, de-escalation.
De-escalation is all verbal.
An emphasis on verbal policing in the Roaring Fork Valley requires education in Spanish language. The Carbondale Department hosts regular Spanish immersion classes, and the Law Enforcement Training Academy offers a longstanding Spanish course.
So I actually started teaching for the first time at the academy in 2005, and I started teaching a Spanish class there. And we were one of the few academies that had a Spanish class, and we really incorporated a lot of cultural elements of the Hispanic community and into that module and making sure that people explain to that segment of the community that we're local law enforcement. We don't do anything with immigration. That's not our concern. Our concern is about the safety and welfare of our residents and the people here in our community, and that includes you.
Education is a small part of the Carbondale Police budget, which is about $1.79 million, according to the 2020 municipal budget. $1.6 million of that budget is for personnel services alone. Another line on that budget? Police equipment, just under $30,000. In addition to the equipment visible on a police officer, each member of the Carbondale Force is issued an AR-15 for barricaded suspect situations, mostly. They train several times a year on those, as well as shotguns that fire beanbags.
They're a non-lethal option. We have never used them, but we train on them.
Chief Schilling says the department doesn't have tear gas or rubber bullets, and he says the Carbondale Force doesn't allow chokeholds, a rule many municipalities and states are implementing in the wake of George Floyd's death. Colorado Democrats presented a state Senate bill last week introducing policies around officer-worn body cameras, reporting on use of force, and the creation of a statewide reporting database, among other actions.
I'm very supportive of stuff like that because it should have a mutual benefit, not only to agencies our size, but agencies that are, you know, thousands of officers.
A more local shift will take place when Chief Schilling retires from the Carbondale Force after a 37-year career. Lieutenant Kirk Wilson has plans for when he steps into the role, including hosting a community police academy and implementing mental health check-ins for the officers.
In the 18 years that I've been an officer in Colorado, I mean, it's getting better all the time. And this is definitely an agency that's looking, how do we add to what we do? How do we better what we do? How do we add value to our community?
I'm Kathleen Shannon.
That does it for this week's newsreel on KDNK. All of our stories and more are at kdnk.org. The Weekly Newsreel is a news magazine that takes a look at the week's top local and regional news stories aired on KDNK between Monday and Friday. Subscribe to our podcast and give us a review on iTunes. If you have a tip on something you'd like the KDNK news team to cover, send it to news@kdnk.org. All submissions are confidential. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh. Thanks for listening and have a great week.